Hill, in and for the seventh judicial circuit. All persons having business before this honorable court are admonished to draw near and give their attention as the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this honorable court.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case for argument is PRC Bricks against Schmidt. Mr. Johnson.
May it please the court, opposing counsel. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is David Johnson, and I'm here today on behalf of the appellants Kim Schmidt, PBC Bricks, and their trial attorneys, George Matana and Dennis Tahaney. The basic issue in this case is, does service of process mean anything anymore? The basic facts of this case involved Kim Schmidt being sued by...
How do we get to such a question?
Well, I would get to this question...
It's been already litigated in the state court.
The issue was raised with the trial court, and it was then presented to the Court of Appeals as to the validity of the service of process. However, the Illinois Supreme Court has never decided this case or decided this particular issue.
So what? It's a pretty basic principle of law that after you litigate a question to one court, that's the end of the line. And it's doubly a basic principle that when the first court is state and the second court is federal, the federal court doesn't even have jurisdiction.
Well, there are certainly exceptions to the Rooker-Feldman doctrine, which I believe is what you're talking about, the subject matter jurisdiction issue. First of all, the finality of the judgment exception and also the void ab initio exception, I think, both apply in this case. There are several circuits that have held that where a state court judgment or order is void ab initio, is void, then the Rooker-Feldman does not bar a federal court's resolution of that issue under Section 1983 cause of action. Here, since service of process was never effectuated properly upon Kim or CBC Bricks...
That is the very question that has already been litigated and decided. Right? It is really a basic point that even when your objection is jurisdictional, once a jurisdictional argument has been litigated and decided, it's over. You can't keep litigating in another court. It's perfectly understandable not only why this case was dismissed, but why sanctions were awarded. And we'll be asking you at the end of this appeal to explain why sanctions should not be awarded against you for pursuing a frivolous appeal.
Well, Your Honor, Section 1983 is a provision that allows people in state court proceedings to vindicate federal causes of action in federal forms. And I think that is the basics. The basic premise of our 1983 case here is that Section 1983 says that you can vindicate your civil rights in a federal form, and that's exactly what Kim and CBC did in this case, is try to go to federal court, vindicate the federal rights, because their state court plaintiff violated those rights. There have been numerous cases saying that Section 1983 causes of action can be raised out of state court proceeding. Parties are entitled to procedural due process rights in state court proceedings. And Section 1983 is a vehicle to have a federal court come in and correct problems and violations that were done in state court proceedings. That's the whole purpose.
Have you read the Rooker case?
Yes, sir.
That's the very holding of Rooker, and the holding of Rooker is that one cannot use 1983 to litigate a claim that a state court violated the Constitution. That is the core holding of the Rooker case.
Well, the Rooker case and the Feldman case both dealt with final judgments. In this case, this was an interlocutory opinion at the time that Section 1983 cause of action was raised in the federal court. There are circuits that say final judgment is an exception to Rooker-Feldman. There are circuits that say that void ab initio is an exception to Rooker-Feldman. I don't see how it's bad faith or sanctionable to bring up cases that this court has acknowledged. This court has acknowledged in the past, in fact indicated, that the finality of judgment exception is an exception to Rooker-Feldman. And when you bring novel issues to a court that hasn't ruled on them under the Rooker-Feldman doctrine, but it is somewhat, you know, cases going, you know, every which direction on it, I think that's certainly a good faith claim to raise in federal court, and certainly a good faith reason to appeal it. To my knowledge, this court has never ruled on either of those exceptions, the void ab initio or the finality of judgment exception to the Rooker-Feldman doctrine. Where a judgment and order is void, a federal court really should have no prudential concerns about stepping on the toes of the state court. Furthermore, the Rooker-Feldman doctrine is an inverse negative inference, if you will, that where the statute provides that the United States Supreme Court has jurisdiction over judgments from final state courts.
That's the holding of Feldman. That's why I asked you whether you had read Rooker. The holding of Rooker is quite distinct. It's the one I've already described to you.
Yes, sir.
And none of the arguments you're making about exception has anything to do with the basic holding of Rooker, which is that decisions of the state courts simply are not actionable under 1983, period.
Well, I believe that the void ab initio and the final judgment exceptions weren't at issue in Rooker. And so, I mean, if the court didn't write on those issues, I don't really know to what extent that it would be controlling on those issues. In fact, a federal district judge, Judge Plunkett, in a related case, specifically told Mr. Smetana and Kim Schmidt and CBC that he could see where there's a good faith basis for bringing a 1983 cause of action based upon invalid due process and service of process. And then further on in that proceeding, specifically told him to go to Judge Aspin, the judge in this case, and argue those points to him. And so, where you have a federal district judge telling you that you've got a good faith basis to raise a claim, and you've got case law supporting that claim, you know, I don't see how that's a sanctions case. A sanctions case should be somewhat, extraordinary, exceptional types of cases. And this case may be novel, it may be some kind of weird facts, but certainly there are a lot of cases that have been decided by the United States Supreme Court and lower courts dealing with weird facts, dealing with novel issues. That's where law is made. And I would hate to discourage attorneys from being creative and bringing up...
It's actually very important that we discourage attorneys from relitigating issues resolved adversely to them in state court. Well, it has been the objective of the judicial system to discourage relitigation for a very long time.
Yes, sir, but where the state Supreme Court doesn't rule on the issue, and federal form is certainly an adequate way, or is certainly the most appropriate way, to talk about constitutional federal issues. If you take Rooker-Feldman and jurisdictional presumptions to the point of eviscerating Section 1983 causes of action because of state court litigation, I think, you know, that is a road that is somewhat dangerous. How can state court litigants seek redress whenever there is, and I'm not saying necessarily there was a fraudulent conspiracy in this case,
a petition for certiorari in the Supreme Court of the United States.
But original Section 1983 causes of action can't be raised in the United States Supreme Court. That would be an appellate case, appellate jurisdiction, whereas original proceedings have to be brought in federal district courts. And Section 1983 causes of action are specifically for, you can ask for declaratory judgments, you can ask for the type of relief we sought, you can ask for the type of cases this is in that case. I see that my 1 minute light is on. In conclusion, I hope this court realize, looks at this brief, look at the case law we've cited, the arguments we've made, and realize that the trial attorneys had a good faith, a subjective belief that they were filing good claims, and we honestly felt and do still feel that we had a good cause, good faith argument on appeal. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Mr. Kuznair.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Ted Kuznar, and I'm here on behalf of the defendant in this case, Sandra Schmidt. I will be brief.
I would, too, if I had heard the questions that were asked by Judge Easterbrook.
Thank you, sir. With regard to the other aspect of this, and that is the claim made by CBC Bricks, Inc., there is, if the court will look at, as Judge Aspin did, the allegations in that complaint, they're attempting to couch a 1983 cause of action and bring in the defendant, Sandra Schmidt, as a private individual. And yet the only allegations that are made in that particular complaint are the fact that the trial court judge perhaps acted recklessly in entering a particular order. There is no connection in the allegations in the complaint between this, quote, reckless act on the part of the trial court judge and any conspiracy with Sandra Schmidt to effectuate that particular action. So as a result of which, as CBC's cause of action goes in a 1983 cause of action, Judge Aspin found that there was absolutely no connection whatsoever, and there was no aspect of or opportunity to bring in the plaintiff, a private individual, as a defendant in that particular case. Counsel talks about Judge Plunkett and the fact that perhaps his clients were allowed or put in a position where they could present a 1983 cause of action because of the comments made by Judge Plunkett. I was before Judge Plunkett. Judge Plunkett indicated, and I quote, "You've got a 1983 action. You filed it in front of Aspin. Aspin stated what you would attempt to do here is allow this rump proceeding of the way you were served, for which you have full recourse in the state courts, where the federal courts under Rooker-Feldman do not belong, particularly the district courts trying to police the state court, that you would use this problem with service to drag in a divorce case that I will not permit." Respectfully, I don't believe that that is a flag raised by Judge Plunkett that would allow these plaintiffs to bring a cause of action or continue that cause of action under 1983. Judge Aspin awarded fees and sanctions. And we believe under the circumstances that the district court is allowed great discretion in setting forth and ordering such fees. And the action that was brought, we believe, as did Judge Aspin, was found to be unreasonable, frivolous, meritless, and vexatious. We believe under the circumstances that the attorney's fees and sanctions awarded should be upheld, as well as, of course, Judge Aspin's decision. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Johnson? We probably have about 15 seconds.
I will get the 15 seconds back to the court.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.